This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The fall in the value of the dollar doesn't really hit home for a lot of people until they price a summer vacation in Europe. A continent once considered cheap now features $10 cups of coffee in a lot of places. As of this morning, 1 euro costs a bit more than $1.55, so by the time you factor in hotels, food, tour guides, transportation, the only souvenirs you're likely to come back with are deep holes in your pockets. And if that isn't bad enough, just getting to your destination is also more expensive, and the price of fuel suggests that airfares aren't coming down anytime soon. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll have to settle for Wiener Schnitzel at Epcot this summer. Today, advice from two travel experts on how to get the most out of your travel dollar. A little later in the program, Rick Steves will join us to tell us about how to experience Europe on a budget. But first, we begin with the guru of cheap airfares, Rick Sini. So if you have questions or advice on how to get the best airfare, call us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, taping April Fools to the office. But first, Rick Sini joins us from the studios of AMS Production Group in Dallas, Texas, where he's co-founder and CEO of faircompare.com. And nice to have you on the program today.
It's great to be here today, Neil.
And will there be good deals on summer travel?
Well, you know, just like anything, there's going to be good deals and there's going to be tough deals. And I think travelers are going to have to be a little more proactive this year if they want to get a good deal for summer, which means they need to be shopping right now.
Right now, if they're thinking about traveling maybe in late July or August.
Yeah, definitely right now. Some sales are going on, especially if you're going to Europe. And we're seeing some decent sales even in the U.S. if you're willing to be a little bit flexible.
And I mentioned that four-month window. That's what you wrote in an article, that airlines really start paying attention to these booking flights at 4 months out.
Right. So basically, airlines are sort of like any other business. If you want to book something 8 months out, they're going to charge you a mid-tier price because they have about anywhere from 8 to 10 price levels. And they really don't actively start pricing their tickets at the very lowest prices until about 4 months out. And that's when you really should start shopping, especially for domestic travel. When it gets to international travel, you could even start a little bit earlier because there's well-defined seasons. A classic example right now is if you left on May 25th to go to Europe, you might pay $600. If you leave the next day on May 26th from L.A., you'd be paying $1,000.
A little bit of a difference there. In the old days, 6 months ago, people used to say, wait a minute, go last minute. Sometimes they have really cheap fares at the last minute.
Well, that was great. You know, right in the early 2000s and right after 9/11, when there was a serious downturn, there were a lot of last minute deals. But right now, last summer, we had planes 90% full. What that means is basically every flight that you're on is full and only those red eyes don't have seats. So basically, there's no seats to give you at a cheap cost. There's no incentive for the airline to discount those. So basically, you're probably going to pay three or four times pay if you shopped early.
I was astounded when you said a minute ago they have 8 to 10 pricing levels. I thought there was economy, business, first class.
Oh, if only it was so easy. Basically, when you look at tickets nowadays, most airlines have anywhere from 7 to 10 price levels. And on any given moment, when you make a query, they're systems which have been honed to a fine-edged sword over 5 to 10 years will make a decision on what price of those 10 to give you at that any one time. And that's why people are so frustrated about shopping for travel. They might query in the morning, it's one price, query in the afternoon, it's another. And then, of course, airfares change 8 times a day, just like the stock market. So that can also catch you as well.
And can there also be, you know, surcharges as fuel prices go up?
Oh, definitely. I mean, surcharges have really been the big, gorilla this past 7 or 8 months. There really were not many surcharges for U.S. travel up until Labor Day last year. And now we're averaging about $50 round trip for domestic tickets. And if you're going transatlantic, the average fuel surcharge is about $2.15. If you're going transpacific to the Asian area, the average fuel surcharge is around $2.75 right now. With taxes on European travel and $215 for the fuel surcharge, you start off at $330 before the airlines even start to charge you for an airfare.
And let's see if we can get some listeners on in this conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We're talking with Rick Sini, one of the original founders and the CEO of faircompare.com. com. And let's begin with Kevin, who's calling us from Tempe in Arizona.
Hello?
Hey, Kevin. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Well, I found that if you can, if you check on, like, this website called kayak.com. And,
I'm quite familiar with Kayak, yes.
It'll cross-check all the, you know, Travelocity orbits and all those. And then check on Airfare Watchdog, which, as far as I can tell, is sort of an independent club where they just look up the best fares that are unadvertised and post those for you. And then find the best price and then try to beat it on one of those bidding sites. And I think, like, Priceline.com is one of them. And I can't imagine being able to find a better fare than that.
It sounds like, Kevin, you could get a good fare, but it also sounds like a full-time job.
Well,
Kevin, you must be shopping 3 or 4 hours a day, which is not unusual. Industry statistics show that people shop anywhere from 4 to 6 sites before they buy a ticket, and Kevin's obviously a classic example there.
Think of all the and, price you get if you find a good price.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there's definitely it's a game, basically. People love to find. It's a hobby sometimes to find the best deal. Let me give you a little bit of background on your question. Kayak.com actually hits a variety of systems to pull in prices. They don't actually hit Travelocity or Expedia. They actually get it from a variety of airlines and a couple of other. And they do a great job of aggregating that information and bringing it to the fore. So you can see multiple airlines because there can be price differences. Airfare Watchdog is another site that likes to do what I call deal finding, which is they have a group of people that go out and, you know, kind of try to ferret out. Our big claim to fame at FareCompare.com is that we get airfare directly from the airlines and we can post alerts, which is the biggest thing that you can do right now is to know when prices drop before they even hit the airline websites, because our technology actually processes the data in about 5 minutes and we send out those alerts 8 times a day, as opposed to a lot of those companies that send out alerts only at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. And a lot of times those deals are only good for a partial day. So it's really important to know when prices change. Also, as a yeah, well, basically, I like to think of buying airfare sort of like the Kelley Blue Book or Edmunds. You need to know what a good price is first. I think one of the biggest challenges consumers have is they go and they try Rome, Italy, Europe, and they try it for June, they try it for July, they try it for May, and they don't know necessarily what's a good deal and what's a bad deal. And then a lot of times when they do see a good deal, they run home to their spouse to get approval, and the deal's done by the time they get home. So you got to be willing to pull the trigger as well when you see a good deal. So not only do you have to know you have a good deal, you have to be able to pull the trigger quickly nowadays.
And another thing that's happening right now is a program called Clear Skies. This is supposed to make life cheaper and a lot easier for people traveling to Europe. Is that going to change things quickly?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I think you're probably referring to Open Skies.
Open Skies, excuse me. Yes.
Yeah, Open Skies. Definitely. It just started this Sunday, March 30th, and it basically allows free market competition between the European community and the U.S., whereas before it was very difficult for airlines to get flights into certain places like Heathrow. What you're seeing just this week, you'll see like 6 or 7 new airlines launching a bunch of new flights, all at sale prices, and hopefully what we'll see in the next year is several of the lower cost airlines starting to fly transatlantic, which will really drive the price point down. Right now, you know, we're looking at prices, you know, where the base airfare is $150 each way to London all the way up until May, even from New York. That's because the fuel surcharge is at $215 and taxes and fees are another $115. So we're at a record low for actual airfare costs. It's just that the price of fuel has really driven up the cost. And of course, once you get there, the currency conversion is a little bit more difficult. Actually, in 2007, there were more inbound foreign travelers into the U.S. from international than any other year before. And they were all bringing empty suitcases, taking stuff home with them.
Let's see if we can get another caller in. Beth joins us from Richland in Wisconsin.
Hi, Richland Center. I'm so excited to be speaking with you all because I have been devoutly participating in this program by listening for years and years. This show absolutely rocks. Mr. Sini, my partner and I have been invited to visit friends in Matsue, Japan, Shimane Prefecture, south of Japan, and would like to get some nice fares. I'm looking at your lovely website right now, and I see that it, in the month of May, it jumps from $9.57 round trip all the way to, towards the end of the month, $12.30.
Wow, that's a big difference.
That's right. International airfare is very seasonal, and the summer season is the high season. So that's it's not uncommon to see Asian airfare, especially from the West Coast. It's a little bit cheaper, but as you get deeper into the mid and over to the East Coast, you can see up to $1,400 to $1,500 round trip into Japan. And what time of year are going to be going?
Well, that's the good part. It's open. I would like to go sometime late spring or summer, but I'm sure we could press that out further if something better were to be available.
Well, there's a couple strategies that I like to do, especially when getting people over to Asia. One thing is, if you can spend the night in Los Angeles somewhere, get a low-cost airline into Los Angeles, relax because you're in for a long flight anyway, maybe spend the night there, do whatever, and then you can get a lot cheaper flights out of the L.A. area into Asia. Sometimes in the San Francisco area, they have some good flights and some inexpensive flights. And then second of all, the time you want to go to really minimize your cost is right at the end of May. Usually that break point this year is going to occur around the weekend of May 24th, which is a Saturday. And that's when the prices jump up very seriously. And this also occurs in Europe as well. Now, every airline has a little bit different season. One might be a week before, one might be a week after, but that's really going to be your best bet.
Thank you very much.
Have a great vacation, Beth.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Rick Cini, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Great. It was great to be on.
Rick Cini, co-founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. He was nice enough to write a blog post for us. You can read about the American right to cheap airfare at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Rick joins us from the studios of AMS Production Group in Dallas, Texas. Well, finding that deal on airfare is the first step, but what about saving a few bucks or euros once you get there? Rick Steves is the expert on bargains in Europe. He joins us to take your calls about, well, how do you get on that canal boat for less than your mortgage payment? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's April Fool's Day, and we'll talk about pranks in the office a little bit later this hour. There's still time to get a few practical jokes in, but right now we're talking about summer travel. Sadly, those overseas hotel rates are not a joke. Neither is the lousy exchange rate between the dollar and the euro. So we've called in the expert. Travel guru Rick Steves will join us to tell us how to find a good deal in Europe. If you have questions about how to experience Europe on a budget, or if you've recently traveled to Europe and didn't max out the credit cards, how'd you do it? 800-989-8255. Drop us an email, talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Rick Steves is the author of several European travel guidebooks. He hosts the public radio talk show Travel with Rick Steves and the television show Rick Steves Europe, and he joins us now from his office, from his studio in Edmonds, Washington, and it's nice to have him Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks, Neil. Good to be with you.
And, all right, we talked in the previous segment about how to get to Europe at a reasonable price. Where should you go to have a reasonably priced vacation once you get there?
Well, that's the natural question with the dollar where it is these days. Where will my dollar stretch further? And, you know, I always tell people, if I tell you Portugal is cheaper than Ireland, but your travel dreams are taking you to Ireland, and Ireland is one of the most expensive corners of Europe, your best value is in Ireland, and you should just know how to travel smartly in Ireland. A smart traveler in one of the more expensive countries can travel, I think, impressively reasonably, but you just have to know how to order lower on the menu. And I really believe you don't compromise in the way of experience by ordering lower on the menu. You just surround yourself with local people and actually a more real experience.
But you'd best throw away that copy of Germany on $5 a day.
Yeah, it's kind of tough these days. You know, the Americans have to realize that we're not as rich as we think we are. We're certainly not poor, but the days that we hop into a cab as effortlessly as the Germans are behind us. Now we need to get used to standing in line at the bus stop with the Portuguese people. You know, we can still have a lot of fun. 12 million Americans go to Europe every year. I'm heading off next Sunday. I'll be over there for 2 months and checking all the information in my guidebooks. And, you know, we just need to know how to order smartly. You know, you can take a shuttle in from any airport in Europe for $15 today. That's not going to break the bank. think you just don't want to pay $100 for the taxi ride. You can go to, instead of a three-star hotel for $300, you go to a one-star hotel for $150 for a double, including breakfast. Now, you know, in a lot of ways, I think Europe is less expensive than traveling in the United States, even considering our bad dollar. But again, this is the same thing I've been preaching for 30 years. You got to travel like a temporary European. You got to know the alternatives. Every country has bed and breakfast, offering double the cultural intimacy for half the price of a hotel if you know the local word for bed and breakfast. It's Husrum in Norway and Domatio in Greece and Chambordot in France. So there's beautiful opportunities for us to travel closer to the ground, experience more, and spend less. But you got to expect yourself to travel smart.
Though people see that one star next to a hotel on the World Wide Web as they're looking for these things, and I guess they sort of imagine that place, what, in that movie Hostel.
Yeah, I've spent a third of my adult life, literally, in one-star hotels in Europe, and I've never picked up a fungus. You know, I made a lot of friends. Sorry to be so graphic, but I'm just telling you, Americans got to learn to order lower on the menu. They're good enough for Greeks and Irish and Danes and German students, and they've got to be good enough for us. Now, if you've got a lot of money, it's more fun to spend it over there. I've just been trying to answer this question for a lot of our travelers by putting a chart together, and I'm just looking at it right now. We'll have it on our blog, I think, on your blog there afterwards.
Oh, but that's great.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm looking at the cost, relative cost of one-star hotel with breakfast anywhere in Europe, and it ranges from $80 in Madrid and Lisbon for the double to $130 in Rome and Paris and London. A nicer hotel in a two-star hotel would range from $120 to $200, and what I consider a splurge would be in the $200 to $250 range, depending on the country. But, you get... If you're going to go for the high-rise American-style hotel that you'd expect to find in Orlando, you're going to, and if you're not a savvy consumer, you're going to pay a fortune, and you're going to, ironically, isolate yourself from what you traveled to see. Again, I'm going to Lisbon next Sunday, and I'm going to spend $100 a night for my hotel room, and it's going to be right in the midst of one of my favorite cities in Europe. And we got to be on the ball, but we got to realize that the experience has very little to do with how much you're spending. It's just important for us not to be suckered into these strange little worlds where everything, like you said, a $10 cup of coffee earlier. Well, if somebody's spending $10 for a cup of coffee, they're renting real estate, and they better sit there for a couple hours and watch the view. I was just in Rome a week ago with my son who's studying there, and in the tourist areas, I was spending $2 for a cup of coffee, and when I went out where my son was staying, where the tourists don't go, it cost $1 for a cup of coffee. That's with today's exchange rate. So, you know, it's fun news here in the media to talk about the scare stories, but the reality is there's suckers spending $10 for a cup of coffee, or wealthy people that want to enjoy the view, or actually, I think $10 for a cup of coffee on St. Mark's Square in Venice is a good deal. But if you just want a nice espresso, stand at the bar and you get it for $1 50 yards away.
I was about to feel really bad until I realized I did have that $10 cup of coffee on St. Mark's Square in Venice.
Is that right? Yeah, but you see, you're probably paying for the orchestra too.
Oh, and, yeah, indeed the orchestra. Well, the other thing is a lot of people get the bill at a place like that in Venice and say, oh, well, I got to add 20%.
Yeah, and that's another point. I've just written an article called Take Back 20, talking about 20 ways Americans can take back the 20% our dollar has lost in the last year on the European euro. And one of the things is don't over-tip. Americans think we should tip, but in Europe it's a different standard, and in many cases service is included in the bill, and Americans are almost embarrassingly clueless when it comes to tipping. You want to tip appropriately or when appropriate, but generally in Europe it is included.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Our guest, of course, is Rick Steves. You see him on public television, listen to him on public radio. Here's your chance to ask him a question about how to travel cheaply in Europe. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Chris. Chris calling from Roanoke in Virginia.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, thank you for having the show. I kind of wish you had it a few months ago. My husband and I actually just came back from London and Paris.
And did it break the bank?
No, not really.
Huh. What'd you do?
A lot less than we thought it would. We actually have the Rick Steves guides for both London and Paris. And we used those and read through them. But what we did for London was we went to a lot of the free museums.
And there are a lot of free museums in London.
Mm-hmm.
Which was your favorite?
Oh, probably the British Library.
Hmm. You don't think of that as a museum, but it's a great place to hang around for a day or two. Rick,
Neil, I was thinking Chris was saying London didn't break the bank, and I thought, well, Chris is probably enjoying the cultural attractions in London. London is expensive from a hotel and eating point of view, but you can picnic for the cost of groceries anywhere in the world, obviously, and then you get out there and you see these cultural wonders. And let me just quickly review some things about London sightseeing. National Gallery, free. Changing of the Guard every day at 11:30, free. Lunch at St. Martin's in the Fields, 1 o'clock, free. British Museum, free. British Library, free. Evensong at St. Paul's Cathedral, normally $15 to get in, but free for the Evensong service daily at 5 o'clock. And then you go to a carnival-like scene in Covent Gardens and Piccadilly Circus. Next day, Portobello Road Market, free. Go to the auction at Sotheby's, free. Victorian Albert Museum, free. Stroll the Jubilee Promenade along the south bank of the Thames. Stop at Shakespeare's Globe Theatre for a play. Groundling tickets with your elbows on the stage cost £5. That's $10 to see some of the greatest Shakespeare in the world. So those are budget ways to do the most expensive city in Europe. So you have that $300 hotel, but if you don't mind using the tube, equipping yourself with good information and expecting yourself to travel smart like Chris did, the rest of it can be an incredibly good value, and talk about experience.
Oh, yeah. We got the 7-day tube pass. The only
That's
time
critical.
We ate out. Huh?
That's critical, yeah, to get the tube pass.
And the only times we ate out were really lunch.
And then you can go to the pubs and eat for $12 a good hot meal. The pub food is not as embarrassingly, mushy peas as it used to be. They've got crisp vegetables and take pride in their food, but you're eating in a pub instead of a fancy restaurant. I do want to remind you that Europe is really getting automated, and tourists are attacked from a price point of view because we don't know, we're kind of clueless and not very savvy. But if you take the passes like Chris got, you will save a lot of money, and you want to just kind of prepare yourself to go like the locals do and then not be subsidizing their infrastructure by doing it like the clueless tourist who would pay, $5 for a bus ride. Well, for the cost of 4 bus rides, you can get a 2-day pass.
Mm-hmm. We also went to the grocery store on the way back from the tube when we were headed back to our hotel. And we would get enough food for the evening for £7.
That's not so bad, but at $14 or so. Chris, thanks.
But of course you're going to the grocery store and picnicking, but you got to turn that into a plus by choosing an atmospheric place to enjoy your picnic in front of floodlit cathedral and enjoy good local food. I mean, see, this is the new way that Americans need to travel, like people who have been relatively less wealthy have always traveled. We're just not on the top anymore because of the way we're running our economy. So the reality is we got less buying power compared to the Danes and the Germans and the Brits, and it's always going to be that way. So let's travel smarter, but let's not just stay home because of this.
Chris, thanks very much for the call. Glad you enjoyed your vacation.
We did.
And here's an email from Liz, writing about the island of Elba, mostly associated with Napoleon, I suppose. But she writes, interested in planning a holiday in 2009 to celebrate my dad's 70th birthday. His grandparents came from there in 1912. A group of 10 or so family members will probably go. What would you recommend to make plans with a family group of that size? Do you recommend finding a home or staying at hotels? And the best way to travel from the island to the mainland?
Well, there's good ferry connections between the mainland and Elba. That's no problem. I'll remind our listeners that the Europeans love their islands, and I generally leave the islands for the Europeans. A lot of them are resorts, and you just don't want to compete with a densely populated continent of lemming sun worshippers like Europe is. I'd rather stay on the mainland in general. But in the case of Liz, she's got relatives or family heritage and so on, so Elba would make sense. My son is with a group right now, a group of his fellow students. They took a break from their studying in Rome and went down to Sicily, and Andy knew the smartness of renting an apartment. So he had 8 or 10 of his students sharing an apartment for a week, and they had their own kitchen, and it was really much, it was about half the price of a cheap hotel to have 10 people sharing very comfortable apartment accommodation. So if you can stay put and if you have a group in, you can consume smartly there and enjoy sort of the economy of scale. And I find all over Europe, given the high cost of hotels, there are more alternatives like apartments that people are taking advantage of.
Let's talk with Peter. Peter with us from Wichita in Kansas.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hey, Peter.
My wife and I are planning a trip to Spain, to Barcelona specifically, in May. Do you have any recommendations? We're on about a $5,000 budget.
Does that include?
That includes airfare.
I was going to say. Go ahead.
Well, I would say, that's the question. What does it cost to travel in Europe? I would say if there's two adults traveling together, and you have $150 a day per person for room and board, You got it made. That's very reasonable. That's very realistic anywhere in Europe. $300 per day per couple for room and board. Of course, you've got transportation after that and your sightseeing. Barcelona is an expensive place from an accommodations point of view. It's a wonderful place from an eating point of view and from a sightseeing point of view. Barcelona is one of the cities, to me, that has a little more demand for hotels than they got rooms. So you want to make a reservation well in advance, Peter, for that. But I absolutely love Barcelona. And I don't know all the details of your budget, $5,000. You have to take your flight out of that and so on. But I just think that if you figure $150 a day when two people traveling together, one person, it's more expensive because a single room costs almost as much as a double room. So two people share. The more people you pack into a room, obviously, the cheaper it gets. Let me quickly review these comparative prices for you. Double rooms range in my chart all over Europe from $80 to $130 with breakfast in a simple hotel, in a medium hotel from $120 to $220 per double in that way. If you look at the cheapest bunks if you're hosteling, and there's 2,000 hostels around Europe, they took youth out of the system. If you're over 55, you get a discount on the membership card. Bunks in youth hostels range from $20 to $40 a night. A great thing about that, especially if you're a younger hostel, is you have a kitchen there and you got friends from around the world to plan tomorrow's adventures with. The cost of a Big Mac ranges from $3 to $6, depending on the country. So it's, you know, it's $3 in Vienna, it's $3 in Paris and Rome, it'd be $5 in Munich, and $6 in Scandinavia. A one-hour train ride out of any town in Europe ranges from, I'd say, $6 to $25. $6 for an hour train ride in Eastern Europe and Greece, $25 for a train ride in Britain or Ireland. So you can see it ranges a lot from country to country. You'll spend $10 or $15 for major museum admissions.
Peter, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We're talking with Rick Steves about how to travel with the dollar, where it is in Europe. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Katrina on the line. Katrina's with us from Toledo, Ohio.
Hi, this is Katrina.
Go ahead.
And I was just calling as an avid traveler and been around Europe and also a young traveler. My always biggest thing is going to places that avoiding the major cities, and then you can go to really nice places and spend a small amount of money, like in the Eastern Europe area, Estonia, and those places that are part of Europe now, actually.
They always were part of Europe. They're now part of Europe politically.
They're part of the EU.
Yes.
Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. I've been to Tallinn in Estonia, and it's like being in a European city. You have 700-year-old castles, cobblestone roads, you know, nice places like that, but you're spending money like us going down to Mexico or something. You know,
that's a very good.
It's very nice, though, you know, if you avoid those major cities. If you just want to go to Europe, it's a nice way to do it.
And do remember, when
there's people out there, if they've been to college, even if they're not anymore and still have their student IDs, I found I could use that at a lot of places, at museums and things like that, almost anywhere from Finland to other places in Europe and stuff like that.
Oh, those gullible Europeans.
Yeah.
Although seniors don't usually get in for the senior admission price because we don't reciprocate when they come here, and they make a very clear point to that. It puts off a lot of American seniors. Why does that French person get in at half price and not me? Well, because France reciprocates with Germany and the United States doesn't when it comes to senior discounts. Katrina makes a very good point about getting off the beaten path. Italy is notorious for being expensive, but most people's experience in Italy, as Neil mentioned with a $10 cup of coffee, is in places like Venice, Florence, and Rome, where all the tourists go. If you can go to the rest of Italy, you'll find prices are substantially less expensive. And of course, what we think of as Eastern Europe is now part of the EU, and it's wide open. And boy, talk about the new frontier for European tourism and a lot of fun. You'll find hotels across Eastern Europe are almost the same as in the West, but experiences after that are much, much cheaper. Great classical concerts in Prague for $15 instead of $50.
Yeah, we went to meals where, it'd be like a four-star restaurant here, five courses.
Yeah.
And spend, you know, $80 for two people, but here would be $300-$400, you know. It was just,
yeah, I went, I was
really
just
nice
in
experiences.
I was just in Prague, and of course Prague is quite touristy, so you got to be careful, although they'll rip you off in the restaurants. But you get on the train for an hour and a half, go east to Olomouc, the capital of Moravia, which nobody knows about. And yeah. I was so impressed that you go to a restaurant and you don't even look at the price. You order whatever you want. They respected us, and we got great food for peanuts. And remember, the very best beer in Europe is in the Czech Republic, and it cost a dollar for a mug. You pay $8 in Ireland and $10 for a beer in Scandinavia. The best stuff is in the Czech Republic.
There's a lot better places than Prague now to, you know, go further south or other places that are like it, but you're right.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of those cities have just become so touristy and overpriced.
Well, Prague is the gateway to Eastern Europe, and understandably, it's got more tourism now, I think, than Salzburg, and it's comparably priced. But Krakow, the historic capital of Poland, is considered one of the new Prague's, and of course, Croatia is very popular. Now, I was just in Bosnia, and Mostar is just wonderful. I've had so much fun, by the way, writing my blog and reporting on all of this, and it's fun to go to places that are a little offbeat, whether it's Morocco or Bosnia or Tallinn, as Katrina was talking about, and get away from the tourist crowds and closer to the people. And there you'll find your dollar stretching two or three times as far as it would in the more famous touristy places in the West.
Katrina, thanks very much for the call. That blog that Rick Steves mentioned, well, you can go read that at our blog site at npr.org/blogofthenation. Both Rick Steves and Rick Cini, our guest earlier in this program, have been kind enough to blog for us. Rick Steves, thanks very much for being with us today.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Neil.
And Rick Steves joined us today from the studio in Edmonds, Washington. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.